This is a recording of pages 44 through 69 of Dolaire's Book of Greek Myths. This ranges from Artemis all the way up to the minor gods section. So just before the minor gods section. Artemis. Artemis, as a newborn goddess, went to her father Zeus and asked him to grant her a wish. She wanted to remain forever a wild young maiden hunting through the woods, and she asked him to promise never to make her marry. Zeus consented, and then she asked him for 50 fleet nymphs as companions and a pack of lop-eared hounds to hunt with. Her father gave her all she asked, and she herself caught 4 hinds with golden antlers and harnessed them to her silver chariot. When the moon's magic light shone over echoing hills and wooded valleys, Artemis hunted with the nymphs and her hounds. After a wild hunt, the goddess loved to bathe in a quiet pool. Woe to the mortal who happened to see her then. One night, quite by chance, a young hunter whose name was Actaeon came upon the pool in the woods where Artemis and her nymphs were bathing. He should have taken to his heels and run for his life, but instead he stood spellbound by the sight of the goddess. Artemis was furious. While the nymphs flung a tunic over her shoulders, the goddess dipped her hand into the pool and threw a handful of water at Actaeon. The moment the silvery drops touched his forehead, antlers sprouted, and rapidly all of Actaeon changed into a stag. His own hounds leaped at him, and to his horror, he could not utter a human sound to call them off. They brought him down, never knowing that the deer was their own master. No mortal shall live to boast that he has seen Artemis bathing, said the goddess, and she picked up her bow and arrows and went on hunting with her nymphs. Artemis was a cold and pitiless goddess. Apollo and Artemis, though different as day and night, were very fond of each other, and they both adored their mother. No one could say a belittling word about gentle Leto without arousing the wrath of her twins. There was a queen of Thebes whose name was Niobe. She was beautiful, and she was rich, and she was blessed with 14 children. Zeus himself was her grandfather, and she was very proud. "Why worship Leto?" she asked to her people. "Build me a temple, and worship me in her stead. I have 7 sons and 7 daughters, while she has only 1 of each." When Apollo and Artemis heard this, they grew very angry. Niobe's disrespect could not go unpunished. Apollo shot his hard arrows at Niobe's 7 sons, by no fault of their own. They were torn from life in the prime of their youth. Then Artemis let fly her painless shafts at the 7 daughters. Quietly, they lay down on their beds and died. Niobe's proud heart was broken. She wept for so long that the gods at last took pity on her and changed her into an unfeeling rock. Still, inside the rock, a spring welled up, and water like tears trickled down the face of the hard stone. Apollo had many wives, but Zeus kept his promise to Artemis and never made her marry. Only once she promised her hand to a suitor, but that was a promise she had no intention of keeping. The suitor was Otis, a gigantic son of Poseidon. Otis and his brother, Ephialtes, were almost 60 feet tall when they reached manhood, and still they went on growing. The gods watched them with concern, for an oracle had predicted that neither gods nor mortals could kill the giant brothers. Mother Earth, however, watched them with pleasure. She was still angry with Zeus for keeping her sons, the Titans, in Tartarus, and she hoped that Otis and Ephialtes would grow big enough to overthrow him. One night, as the brothers slept with their ears to the ground, they heard Mother Earth whisper that such tall and handsome youths should not let themselves be ruled by Zeus. That was just what they had been thinking themselves, for they were vain, as many strong people are. They pulled up mountains, piled them on top of each other, and built a vast new mountain as high as Olympus. From the top, they called to Zeus to surrender his powers, to let them move out of his palace with the other Olympians. Artemis could stay and become his bride, shouted Otis, and Ephialtes would take Hera. The two goddesses tossed their heads with scorn, and Zeus, in a fury, hurled thunderbolts at the ruffians. Zeus's thunderbolts glanced off harmlessly, and when Ares rushed out to fight them, they grabbed him and crammed him into a bronze jar and clamped the lid shut. For once, Zeus was really worried, but Apollo, the god of reason, said that if no one could kill them, they must be tricked into killing each other. He persuaded Artemis to pretend that she was in love with Otis. Otis smirked when Apollo called to him that Artemis thought so much of him, and she had accepted his proposal and would wait for him on the island of Naxos. That made Ephialtes jealous. Why hadn't Hera fallen in love with him? Wasn't he as handsome as his brother? But he swallowed his pride and went to Naxos with his brother to meet the bride. When Artemis saw the two brothers arriving, she quickly changed herself into a white deer and ran across their path. She darted to and fro between them, and the brothers, who were eager huntsmen, threw their javelins at the deer. Cleverly, she dodged, and the brothers fell to the ground, pierced by each other's javelins. Neither gods nor mortals could kill the giant brothers, but now they had put an end to each other and were thrown into Tartarus, tied back to back with writhing snakes. All the gods thanked Artemis for saving them and pulled Ares out of the jar where he had been crouching all the while, howling and screaming. Page 48. Orion was another giant son of Poseidon. But unlike Otis and Ephialtes, he was modest. He was a great hunter. No beast could escape from his club and jeweled sword. But he never forgot to praise Artemis as the greatest of all hunters. One day, Orion, who could walk on water as if it were land, came to the island of Chios. The island was infested with lions, wolves, and boars, who roared and howled so loudly at night that the king of Chios could not sleep. He promised Orion the hand of his daughter if he could rid the island of all wild beasts. The king's daughter was beautiful, her father's greatest treasure, and Orion hunted as never before. Soon there was not a wild beast left, but the king did not want to part with his daughter, and claimed that he could still hear the howling of wolves at night. Orion grew angry and threatened to carry off the princess, but the king soothed him with honeyed words and sent for wine and filled his cup so often that Orion drank too much and fell asleep. Stealthily, the king crept up and put out both of his eyes. "Now see if you can carry off my daughter," he said. Blind and helpless, Orion left Chios and staggered over the seas in search of the sun, which he knew could restore his eyesight, but he could not find his way. From afar, he heard the Cyclops' hammers and followed the sound till he came to Hephaestus' forge on the island of Nemnos. The kind god took pity on him and lent him a Cyclops boy to show him the way to the east. With the Cyclops on his shoulders to see for him, Orion walked on till he met the rising sun. The sun let its healing rays play over Orion's blind eyes, and his sight was restored. Then he rushed back to seek revenge on the false king. But when he arrived, the palace was empty, for the king had seen his huge menacing shape against the sky and fled with his daughter. Again, Orion was hunting, and soon forgot the king and the beautiful princess. He walked from island to island, and after a while, he came to the island of Crete. There, he met the goddess Artemis. She was glad to see him, for he could hunt as well as she, and was so very modest about it. Together, they hunted wild goats and rejoiced in each other's company. Orion was the only man Artemis had ever favored. And her brother Apollo grew jealous. One day, while Artemis was away, he sent an enormous scorpion to attack Orion. Orion's club and mighty sword were no avail against the scorpion's poisonous tail. He turned to flee, but as he did, the giant insect stung his heel. Artemis was angry with her brother when she returned and found her companion dead. But she could not stay angry with her twin for long, and he helped her hang Orion's image in the skies as a constellation, so the great hunter would never be forgotten. Over the stormy winter sea, the constellation of Orion glitters, enormous and menacing, and the dark clouds flee before him like wild animals. But in summer, when the constellation of the Scorpion rises over the horizon, Orion begins to sway and stagger. And then he, in his turn, flees and disappears into the ocean. Page 50. Hermes, merriest of the Olympians, was the god of shepherds, travelers, and merchants and thieves, and all others who lived by their wits. His mother, Maia, a Titan's daughter, lived in a cave on lofty Mount Selene, a cave so deep that Hera never knew that Maia was one of Zeus's wives. Maia had therefore borne her son Hermes in peace. Hermes was very precocious, even for a god. His mother had hardly wrapped him and put him into a basket when he began to think of mischief. As soon as she had fallen asleep, he wriggled out of his wrappings and tiptoed out of the cave. In the dark of night, he toddled straight to the pasture where Apollo kept a large herd of white cows. Apollo liked music better than cows, and he did not even notice that Hermes stole into the pasture and picked out the 50 best cows. To keep Apollo from knowing who had stolen his herd and which way they had been driven, Hermes slyly wrapped the hoofs of the cows with bark to disguise their prints, and tied brooms to their tails so they would erase their own tracks. To confuse Apollo further, he drove the cows backward out of the pasture and tied bundles of branches to his own little feet, so it looked as if a giant had led something into the pasture, but nothing out. He hurried home to Mount Selene and hid the stolen cows in a grove. Two of them he sacrificed to the 12 Olympian gods, not forgetting to include himself as the 12th. Then he took the entrails of the sacrificed cows, made 7 strings of them, and strung them tautly across an empty tortoise shell. When he plucked the strings, they made lovely music. He had invented the first lyre. Pleased with himself, he hid the lyre under his arm and tiptoed back into the cave. He climbed into his basket, closed his eyes, and pretended to be sound asleep, but he did not fool his brother. She knew his mother. She knew what he had been up to. Just so you know, a lyre is like a little harp. "Shame on you," she said, "sneaking out at night and stealing Apollo's cows." "Why, mother," said Hermes, "I did what I had to for you and not for me. We don't want to live in this dark cave forever. Soon I will be seated high on Mount Olympus as one of the 12 great gods, and you too will live there in glory as my mother." Then he pulled out his lyre and played his mother to sleep with a lullaby. At dawn, Apollo stormed into the cave where Hermes lay in his basket pretending to be asleep. But Apollo wasn't fooled. An oracle had told him who had stolen his herd, and he jerked little Hermes out of his crib and commanded him to return the cows at once. "How could I have stolen your cows?" Hermes whimpered. "I am only a newborn babe. I don't even know what a cow is. Look for yourself, and you can see that there is not a single cow hidden in this cave." "You are not only a thief, but a liar as well," raged Apollo, and chased Hermes out of the cave and straight up to Olympus. All the gods burst out laughing when they saw innocent-looking little Hermes running with furious Apollo at his heels. "Tell this thief and liar to give me back my cows at once," said Apollo to their father Zeus. "Tell my big brother to stop bullying me I am a newborn and a helpless infant, and I am not a liar, said Hermes. There isn't a cow in my mother's cave.
If they are not in the cave, then show Apollo where they are, said Zeus, and hid a smile in his beard. He was proud of both his sons, and wanted them to be friends.
Hermes had to obey his father, and without any more tricks, he led his brother to the woods, where the cows were hidden. Apollo forgave him, but when he counted his cows and found there were two missing, his anger flared again. Hermes had expected this, and quickly pulled out his lyre and began to play. Apollo listened, spellbound, to the beautiful sounds from the new musical instrument, and he quite forgot his anger. As the god of music, he must have the lyre, and he offered Hermes his whole herd in exchange for the instrument. Hermes drove a hard bargain, and Apollo had to give him his magic wand as well. From then on, the two brothers were the best of friends. Never again did Hermes steal, though he was the god of thieves. He never told a lie, but he didn't always tell the whole truth. His mother, Maia, had no further reasons to be ashamed of him. As the mother of one of the 12 great Olympians, she moved up with him to the glory of Olympus. Zeus was so delighted with Hermes' ready wit that he made him the herald of the gods. He gave him a golden hat with wings, a pair of winged sandals, and a cape under which he could hide his magic tricks. In a flash, he could move from place to place. He put glib words on the tongues of politicians and helped merchants close good bargains. He was as popular among the mortals as he was among the gods. Even Hera was fond of him. She had been really angry with him only once, and that was when he killed her 100-eyed servant, Argus. Then she was so furious that she demanded he be punished, and called all the great and minor gods to sit in council and judge him. Each god was given a pebble, and told to cast his vote according to his decision. Those who found Hermes guilty of a crime were to throw their pebbles at Hera's feet. Those who found him innocent were to throw their pebbles at his feet. Hermes talked well in his own defense. Was it a crime to bore someone to death, he asked. After all, that was what he had done to Argus. The gods applauded, and so many threw their votes to Hermes that he was completely buried in a heap of pebbles. Ever after, travelers put up piles of stones along the roads, and they believed that Hermes stands inside, helping them find their way. These were the first cairns of stones. Hermes also guided those who set off on their last voyage. He touched the eyes of a dying man with his magic wand and led him down to Hades in the underworld.